welcome to the second episode of The Mess Mixologist. It's Friday night, we're going to talk drinks and cocktails. I'm on the beautiful sunny south coast of the UK. It does make me wonder why more of you don't charter here for our beautiful stony beaches, dark grey seas and skies to match. Why you choose to jet off to the Caribbean, the Far East and the Mediterranean is beyond me. Anyway, one day we will do a nice outdoor shoot. For now, we're going to have to go back to the office. And I'll talk you through this week's show. See you in a bit. Hey everybody, welcome back to HMS Spirits HQ. Apologies it's not somewhere a little bit more glamorous. The idea with the show is to do it in different locations, especially when I'm traveling about for work. Unfortunately, like everywhere at the moment, the UK is on lockdown, so we're pretty much stuck at home with not much to do. So we're gonna film in the office again, a place where I'm supposed to do my work and admin, and instead I spend most of my time behind this bar making and playing around with different drinks. So today, I thought we're gonna go through a little bit of cocktail history, one element specifically. It's a large area to cover, so we'll do it across different shows. And then we're gonna go on to make a gin and basil smash, and then we're gonna show you a cheeky, different little way to serve it. Hopefully it'll give something to the guests that's a bit impressive. So we'll go back to kind of the start of cocktails. A lot of it kind of originated in India with punches. They had access to a lot of herbs, a lot of spices, to all the various citrus fruits. That came over to the to Europe and to the Americas. They've got the Caribbean over there. So again, the punches were big over there. And punches then kind of got made by each country with their own herbs and spices. But it wasn't until 1767 where three things happened relatively quickly that started really upping the game for cocktails. So in 1767, the first artificial carbonation was achieved. We're going to talk a bit more about that in another show. In 1800, ice was for sale in America for kind of the first time. And we'll go on to talk about the cool history of ice. See what I've done there. And then moving a little bit forward, in 1826, continuous distillation came about, invented by Robert Stein, and that helped bring distilled spirits to the masses in quantities that were a lot safer to drink. But for today's show, we're going to focus on ice. So until a couple of centuries ago, guys, ice didn't really exist other than a byproduct of winter. It was a guy called Frederick Tudor that saw the opportunity in ice, saw the dollar signs in it like any entrepreneur kind of would, and he created a thirst for drinks that went beyond just a cool glass of water. So it was in 1805 that the Tudor brothers were sat in Boston drinking their cold drinks and eating some ice cream, where one of the brothers said to the other one, wouldn't the colonists in the West Indies be envious of this, just as a passing throwaway comment. Now Frederick Tudor was a bit of an entrepreneur, and that passing comment didn't really leave his mind. And 30 years later, he didn't realise at the time, but 30 years later, he'd be crowned as the ice king of the world, having transported over 12,000 tonnes halfway across the globe. So Frederick Tudor wasn't really great at school, dropped out at 13, went back to the family farm, spent time hunting, fishing, relaxing. They're from a pretty wealthy family. It was only when his brother William made a joke to him that they should harvest the ice from the family's pond that Frederick decided to take this seriously. So Frederick managed to convince his brother William that it was going to be a sensible idea to form this scheme and ship ice from New England to the Caribbean, and kind of convinced his brother that these people, once they tried cold drinks, there'd be absolutely no going back for them whatsoever. They pooled their money, got hold of a ship, and their plans were to do the first shipment into Martinique, where they hoped then to create a full monopoly on the ice market there. Unsurprisingly, not many people thought the idea was going to work. So Frederick actually then had to spend $5,000, which at the time was a huge chunk of their seed money, on chartering their own boat to ship the ice across to Martinique. Even the local Boston Gazette reported that it was no joke that 80 tons of ice was on its way to Martinique, and it would be slippery speculation as to whether this would make it or not. It arrived in Martinique. It was in absolutely perfect condition, everything the brothers hoped it would be. They got it to the island, and to their surprise, no one was interested in the ice whatsoever. It was such a new concept to them that they were just completely uninterested. It was at this point that William pulled out. He'd had enough. He didn't quite have the faith that his brother Frederick did, but Frederick was undeterred. He decided to drum up even more money for some people that he'd found, some investors, and he shipped another load to the Caribbean the next year. Unfortunately, there were embargoes on the Caribbean that year, so once again, his idea pretty much flopped. Back at home, the family business had invested in some shady real estate deals. The family fortune had dwindled dramatically. People were getting bored with Frederick's silly schemes. However, by 1810, he had finally turned a profit. He didn't stay in profit very long because between 1809 and 1813, a series of unfortunate events, war, bad weather, his relatives needing money, meant that once again, he was in financial difficulties. He'd been in debtor's prison 3 times and spent the rest of the time hiding from the local sheriff. Like most entrepreneurs though, Frederick still didn't want to give up. Whilst living in a boarding house in South Carolina, he would often take ice to his local bars, sit there with his drinks nice and cold. The locals at first kind of scoffed at the idea, but once trying his nice, beautifully cold beverage, wanted to get involved in it too. He'd also teach the local restaurants how to make ice cream. He'd go to local hospitals and show how they could take people's fever down with ice. And it was one of those things that once people started to realize how good it was, there was no going back. They were all hooked on ice. By 1821, the business actually started catching on a bit. There was big business in New Orleans, Savannah, South Carolina, Havana. But it needed to improve. They needed to upscale. And in stepped an innovator, a guy called Nathaniel Weath, who stepped in, invested, and started streamlining the whole process. They started cutting ice out in grids with horse and plows. Laborers would saw blocks, they put them in canals, float them downstream. They then start stacking them up in big blocks at the other end. Ice ended up being stacked 80 foot high in ice houses, but it still ended up being really, really dangerous for the employees. As well as the huge blocks of ice, the numb hands, the sharp tools for chopping the ice, they're also prone to slipping too. So quite often, workmen would end up with broken legs, knees, limbs all over the place, bloodied and bruised, where a huge block of ice had just slid and knocked them all down. So it wasn't the safest of it. And they were still only harvesting about 10% of the ice successfully that they had access to. With these new methods, though, it still meant that Frederick was well ahead of the game. He cemented his place and owning the monopoly as the Ice King. It was in 1833 where he shipped 180 tons of ice halfway across the globe to British colonists in Calcutta. That venture in itself was so successful, it opened up new trade routes between Boston and India. Frederick Tudor died in 1864, a very rich man, but of an industry that in itself had started to decline. Anyone with their own lake had started harvesting it. Moving forward to the early 1900s, the fridges and freezers had started to become a lot more reliable and people could make their own and freeze it at home. So it kind of was the death of that side of the industry. However, he was long gone by there and a pioneer of those times. The ice industry now of interest is worth $2.5 billion. In the pre-made ice cubes that you buy in your supermarkets for your big beer coolers and things, not taking into account the stuff that you're just making home. Anyway, that's ice done. We're going to use ice in the next cocktail, as you would with most cocktails. So let's get to our gin and basil smash. Right, guys, now on to the drink segment of the show, the one we've been waiting for. Well done for listening to me waffle on about the Ice King. So today we're going to make a gin and basil smash. It's beautifully scented, nice and floral. You've got that stunning green coming through. And once we've made it, I'm going to show you a funky little way to serve it. We're going to be using today my HMS Spirits Mary Rose Gin. It's a classic London dry. It's juniper lead. We use pink grapefruit peel in there to lift the front of the palate and then rosemary for a nice soft finish. The rosemary and the basil will go nicely together in there too. We've got freshly squeezed lemon juice that I bottled up earlier and then a homemade simple syrup. Simple syrup's a really easy one. It's 2 parts sugar to 1 part water. We'll go on in future episodes to discuss all the other things you can put with a syrup. At the weekend I did a beautiful cinnamon one, but I won't give too much away because I'll probably go on to that cocktail soon. Right, so first off, your mixing tin. And we're going to put in 60 mils, which is about 2 ounces of our London Dry Gin. Nice and generous. We're going to put 22 mils, just under an ounce of freshly squeezed lemon juice. You've got the lemon and the sugar syrup working together to make some balance against the alcohol. We're going to put about 10 ml of sugar syrup in here. And then about 12 fresh basil leaves. Wherever you are in the globe, basil's relatively easy to get hold of. Smells beautiful. Take these off. And before we put these in, we're going to give them a quick slap. That wakes the oils up, wakes the flavours up. I mean, if I walked into your bedroom and gave you a big slap in the morning, it'd wake you up and ready for the day too. You might not be too happy with me, but that's what it does to the basil leaves. Right, now a good shake. Take the top off. Oh, that smell is phenomenal. In this cocktail, we're going to use crushed ice. I've pre-crushed it, because it's no fun for you just to watch me crushing ice. We'll get some ready for the garnish. We're going to use our Hawthorne strainer in there, and we're going to fine strain so we don't get any bits. You've got that beautiful green coming through. We garnish that with a nice fresh bit of basil. And there's our gin and basil smash, everybody. Cheers. Oh, that's beautiful. Right, and we promise you another way to serve it. Here's one I prepared earlier. For those of you that might not have seen this, we're gonna do a baby Yoda. So first of all, let's just strain that into the glass. The only reason I'm doing that, it saves me drinking two afterwards. There we go. Little Yoda needs some ears. And for the ears, we're gonna use a couple of limes. His little Yoda-y ears. So an eighth of a lime, one this side. One that side, and we need eyes. I did have some olives, here we go. We've got little black olives for the eyes. And on a cocktail stick, or if you've got a little garnish stick, there we go, guys, a little baby Yoda. And I'll put a picture of that close up after the video. Well, thanks for watching. It's been a pleasure to have everybody here. I did mention this episode we were going to talk about eco products. My samples haven't actually arrived, so we'll talk about those next week, because they're really important, not only for the globe, but specifically for yachting too. You're so close to the ecosystems, so we'll talk about those next week. And I'm hoping to have a guest on next week too. So stay safe, everybody. Looking forward to seeing you next week. Thanks for tuning in.